This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I am Ira Flatow. You know, your dentist always told you to brush your teeth twice a day and to floss at least once. But what he never told you was that it might save your life. The human mouth houses hundreds of different types of bacteria, and most of them are harmless. But others cause periodontal disease, a condition affecting the gums that can lead to tooth loss. Now researchers from Columbia University and University of Minnesota have published results from a study showing that people with a higher proportion of gum disease-causing bacteria in their mouths were more likely to have thicker carotid arteries. These are the arteries leading to the brain, and the thickening of them is an indicator of a risk of stroke or even heart attack. Other studies have found evidence for this link before, but this is the first to examine the microbiology of periodontal infection and relate it to an increased risk of developing cardiovascular disease. Maybe we should start listening to our dentist a little bit more. What do you think? Well, the principal investigator of the study just published in the journal Circulation. Oh, maybe we'll put that question to him. He's here with us to talk about it. And if you'd like to give us a call and discuss it, our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Moise Desvario is an assistant professor of epidemiology at the University of Minnesota School of Public Health in Minneapolis and at the Columbia University Medical Center's Mailman School of Public Health here in New York. He joins us by phone. Welcome to Science Friday.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
How do you get a bacterial infection in the gums to cause hardening of the arteries or narrowing of the arteries?
Well, first I want to say that, as you said quite correctly, there are a number of studies that have suggested that association. And we don't know, as of now, whether it's causal or not, whether it actually causes the hardening of the arteries. And I'm going to explain to you, if I may, what we did. Okay.
Sure.
What we did is that we randomly selected a number of patients, 1,056 patients, 700 of them about are dentate, so had teeth, in northern Manhattan, around the Mailman School of Public Health at Columbia University. And we invited them to come in, and we did three things. One, we measured the bacteria in their mouth. So my colleague Panas Papapanu in the dental school measured about 11 bacteria in their mouth, four of them that are associated, as you said in your introduction, with periodontal disease that we know cause periodontal disease, and seven of them that we used as control. So that's the first thing we measured. The second thing we measured was the usual suspects of the risk factors of cardiovascular disease, whether they smoke, they have diabetes, they have hypertension and stuff like that, which I call the usual suspects so that we know exactly their status at entry. And the third thing we measure was the thickness of the carotid arteries. Now, as you stated in the introduction, the carotid arteries are those arteries when you're jogging, for example, and that you take your pulse in your neck, that's what you feel. And the reason you feel them is because they're really close to the skin. They're really accessible. And because they're so close to the skin, you can actually use a high-resolution Doppler ultrasound that my colleague Ralph Sacco, who heads the stroke unit at Columbia, and his team measured as part of our study that high-resolution, the thickness of the carotid artery. And the thickness of the carotid artery, the thicker the carotid artery, has been demonstrated to be a very good predictor of stroke and heart attack in other studies. And what we found was that, one, the more of the four bacteria that the person have, the thicker their carotid arteries were. And, well, we said, well, that's good, but is that true just for the four bacteria, or is it true for all the 11 bacteria? Because I can hear you thinking, well, it may be possible that people have simply a lot of bacteria in their mouth because they have bad oral health, and if they have bad oral health, maybe they just have bad general health. They don't take care of themselves and stuff like that. You know, they smoke and all of that, and that's a fair question to ask. So we added each one of the seven bacteria and try to see whether it really increased the relationship also between the bacteria and the thickening of the arteries. And what we found was that none but one of those bacteria increased the relationship. So what we're left with is that all the causal bacteria, causal for periodontal disease, increased the thickness of the arteries, were related to a thickening of the arteries, while none but one of the seven bacteria that we use as control in the mouth were actually related to the thickening of the arteries. But again, I want to stress out that this is not causal yet. And the reason this is not causal is because we did all those measurements at once. at one time. So we brought the people in and we did all of it at once. And it's the chicken and the egg thing. Because we measured everything at once, as you know, we don't have the time sequence. We don't necessarily know which one comes first. And that clearly is something that we would need to know in order to establish a leap to causality. So right now it becomes really crucial to continue to follow those subjects as part of that study that we're continuing, actually.
Mm-hmm. Was there any gender difference here?
That's a very good question. We had hints of a gender difference in the sense that the relationship held for both genders, at least in our subset, in our population. But it seemed to be a little stronger in males. But I'm hesitant to say that because we would need to await, again, the prospective study to know whether this difference really holds. But there was a hint of a stronger relationship in males mm-hmm. versus females.
Well, what exactly will further studying tell you?
Well, one thing that it will tell us is the time sequence. And as we just discussed, this is really important in establishing causality because it might well be that the relationship is there, but it may be that it's not necessarily causal because simply we don't know which one comes first. As I said, the second thing that will tell us, hopefully, is whether it translates into clinical events. We have right now a relationship between the levels of bacteria, the specific bacteria, and the thickening of the arteries. But we want to know whether in our population it does translate into more strokes and heart attacks, which we don't know as of now. We assume, because of other studies have shown that there's a very good correlation, a good prediction between the thickening of the artery and the stroke and heart attack. So that's been shown in other studies by other investigators. But we want to make sure that in this population that's also true.
Let's say for sake of argument it does pan out, would that mean that antibiotics would be prescribed for people with these bacteria in their mouth?
Well, again, that's very far into the future, but if it does pan out, that could be one possibility indeed. That could be one possibility. The reason we're being cautious, obviously, is because, as you know, history of medicine is littered with theories that everybody thought were right and at some point were not. Now, having said that, we also know that nowadays we treat gastric ulcer, for example, with antibiotics for H. pylori.
Yeah.
But we also know that there are other cases. At some point, you know, tuberculosis, there was a whole debate as to whether tuberculosis was a hereditary disease instead of an infectious disease.
Yeah.
So we're not at this stage. So that's why we're being very cautious. The other thing I want to say is that we're not in it. My colleagues, scientists, you know, both, you know, at Columbia and at the University of Minnesota, David Jacobs and others, we're not in it to really prove and advocate the point. What our quest is for truth. We want to know whether or not there is a relationship. And that's why the NIDCR, which is the Dental Institute of the NIH, funded the study. Because if indeed there is a relationship, if there is one, between dental infection, periodontal infections, and vascular disease, the relationship doesn't really need to be very, very strong, what we call the relative risk, to be really important. Because periodontal infections are so common and so prevalent that even if it's an increase of, for example, 50%, at the population level, what we call the attributable risk would be really important.
Yeah.
So that's why we cannot afford really not to follow through and at least investigate to
yeah.
see whether there is one or not.
Let me get a phone call or two in here. Delwan in Memphis. Hi. Is it Delwan?
Hi.
Yes, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm a resident physician here at the University of Tennessee, Memphis, and I was calling because I'd like to know if in this study anyone had ever done one of two things. One is measure the C-reactive protein, which in the past has been linked to an increased risk
right.
of both heart attack and stroke, and in fact that is mediated or in some way affected, if you will, by infection, number one. And number two, with regard to this increased risk that you noticed associated with periodontal disease, were these people who were enrolled in this study predominantly either inner city or what have you? Because here at University of Tennessee, Memphis, I mostly practice in a sort of a safety net hospital, and we do have a predominantly inner-city population, we have a higher incidence of periodontal disease in these patients for reasons that aren't
expected. Right. Doctor, let me get an answer because we're running out of time.
Yeah, sure. Quickly, the CRP is a very good question. We did measure CRP, the C-reactive protein, because as you said, it's been associated with other studies by Rittger and others with inflammation. And to our surprise, CRP was not elevated in that population, and there was no link in our population between the level of CRP and atherosclerosis. Now, having said that, I hasten to say that this does not necessarily mean that it doesn't go at least through CRP, because in our specific population, the levels of CRP were relatively high. And because they're high, and if everybody has a high CRP, then you may not be able to discriminate. That's the first question. The second question regarding the population was recruited from five specific zip codes in northern Manhattan. And the reason we did that is because in that zip code, people are relatively having the same access to care. And that minimizes, as you know, the social bias and possible bias due to socioeconomic status and stuff like that. So it was five zip codes in northern Manhattan that is the same population, actually, that the northern Manhattan study looked at. So in the ENVEST study, we used those five zip codes of patients, tri-ethnic, Hispanic, black and white, males and females.
All right. Thank you very much, doctor, for calling.
Thank you.
1-800-998-255. When will you have results? We've got about a minute left. When will you have results for the next part of your study? Soon, hopefully?
Well, soon in science time, you know, which is less than planetary time, of course. But we need to follow them at least a couple of...
A little shorter than geological time.
But, you know, we need to follow them at least for another 3 to 6 years and then to make sure that everything happens. Because one of the things you touched on very, if I can say quickly.
Quickly.
One of the things that happens is that people improve their overall health as programs like yours go ahead. So we have to wait a little longer, which is good that they improve their health. But, you know, it reduces the exposure. Therefore, we have to actually look a little longer.
Dr. Desvario, thank you for taking time to talk with us. Good luck
to you.
Sir. Bye. Luis Desvario of Columbia University. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to switch gears and talk about forbidden science. Maybe you have some forbidden knowledge in the research you'd like to do, but you think you really shouldn't touch on it, but you'd like to do it. We'll hear about maybe share some words from your colleagues who might be calling in. We'll talk about a study that's published this week in Science. Stay with us. We'll be right back.